Locked On Flyers, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Flyers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Flyers podcast for Thursday, November 25th, your daily dose of Flyers news, analysis, and high-quality content that is wishing you and yours a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, at Locked On Flyers. Keep up to date on all the Flyers news, our episodes, all that good stuff. You can also email the show at lockedonflyers@gmail.com. I'm Rachel Donner. You can find me on Twitter at rmiriam, and you can find Russ Cohen on Twitter at Sportsology. On today's show, we are doing a special Flyers and Florida Panthers crossover show with my good buddy Armando from the Locked On Florida Panthers podcast. Locked On Flyers is free and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts. So subscribe and you will get all of our episodes here on the Locked On Sports Network. All right, so before we get into the crossover, just a heads up, today is our Thanksgiving episode. We will be taking tomorrow off for the holiday weekend, but we'll be back again on Monday. So without further ado, here is our crossover episode. All right, so we are here post-game after the Florida Panthers defeated the Philadelphia Flyers 2-1 in overtime. I'm Rachel Donner from the Locked On Flyers podcast, here with Russ Cohen, also from Locked On Flyers, and Armando Velez from Locked On Florida Panthers, who gets to talk about the winning team.
Thank you guys for having me. It's great to do yet another crossover with Locked On host, and this is my second straight day doing a podcast with Flyers content creators. Yesterday I did an episode with Mary Clark of the Cross NHL show, so very thankful to be doing these the last 2 days with you guys.
Love Mary, that is so good.
Yep.
The Panthers did come out on top of this one in the end in overtime, but I think there were definitely periods of the game where each team kind of had their moments. But what was your take, Armando?
I mean, it's funny because before the Philadelphia Flyers scored their first goal, the Florida Panthers were really dominating the zone time. They're dominating the shots on goal. And then once the Philadelphia Flyers caught the Florida Panthers on a line change, and Konechny was able to connect with Farabee for that goal that beat Bob Vyhl. And there's been rare times where Bob has been beat Vyhl this year, and that was one of the few times that you seen it. The first 2 years, you saw that quite a bit. But this year has been a little different for Sergei Bobrovsky. And after that, the Flyers were just dominating the zone time as well. So that's the momentum swing that they needed and that was after the Florida Panthers had a rush on the other end. So the Florida Panthers, even if they didn't have a line change there, they weren't able to get set on the other end. So that was a bit of great ice vision by Konechny on that one to make a stretch pass over to Farabee. And then this was also the first game that the Florida Panthers did not score 4 goals at home, though they're still 11-0-0 at home and 1 win away from the record. This was the Philadelphia Flyers really gave the Florida Panthers probably their biggest challenge at home this year. And the Panthers, the fact that it was this close, and Andrew Burnett talks about playing from behind, not wanting to be too much behind neither. And that's something that they often faced really on the road. The Florida Panthers, they found a way. That's really what it came down to. They found a way and showed in that third period with Bennett on the power play goal, beautiful feed by Duke, and then Ekblad on that game winning goal. Now he has 5 straight games with a point, 17 points in 19 games now, and definitely a guy who needs to be considered for the Norris this year.
I'll tell you, I do vote, and he'll be in there. I think Fox is a little ahead of him, but I think he's in the conversation for sure. Doughty would have been the leader, but he got hurt, right? He was amazing. You know, the Konechny play, I think it was his hockey IQ because he saw it was a bad change. So he knew he could rip off a pass like that. And Farabee's very confident in when he's coming in on net. Even during this streak where he doesn't score, he hasn't been scoring. He knows, like he really is very decisive with the puck, always has been. And so I wasn't shocked to kind of see that result. Look, Martin Jones was great. He really was. Both goalies were great. I mean, they both were reading, reacting. They were doing everything you needed to do. Jones probably had the best save of the night. But, you know, in that regard, it probably doesn't matter. Florida didn't give up, though. Like you said, Florida, they were going to get their chances. And they figured out, I think in the third period, midway in the third, they figured out, okay, we're going to stop with the singular chances. Because after Verhaeghe had some glorious chances, we're now just going to pass it around the horn and get him moving. And I do think that that was something that after all those saves with Jones, I felt like Florida wasn't going to be denied in that period. And even though the Flyers did have a really good chance, that they had that one great chance, but I just looked at it that way. Ekblad, I'm happy. I'm happy he's healthy. I just really like this guy and really root for him. So, you know, the fact that he played that kind of game, and we talked about it when we did our preview, you know, Rachel and I said, hey, look, Aaron Ekblad's a force. You've got to deal with him. Now, you know, one other thing on the Flyers end that was good was, you know, Morgan Frost played really well. I still think the expectations from the broadcast were a little too high for him, but that's fine. He did play well, good for him. And they did put Ristolainen on the top pairing. What I didn't realize is that they were going to just switch pairs, but they, you know, I'd been talking about that since last show, like maybe that's one of the changes they should do. So I think they should stick with that change for now because you got to keep Braun on the third pair. All that said, Florida's in good shape, man. I mean, I don't think Brunette is going anywhere. I know the popular theory outside of Florida was he can't possibly keep this going. And I was like, why? Why can't he? He was with the team. It's even if it was a Quenneville team, he was still a part of it. He knows these guys. They will play for him. I see no issue.
Yeah, and the best way was to promote from within for this team because of familiarity. Rachel, you had something to say?
Yeah, I just want to talk a little bit more about some of those standout performances. Russ, you know, on the Flyers side, you mentioned a couple of them. Martin Jones. I want to talk more about Martin Jones because he is continuing to surprise and delight, I think. You know, he had a couple rough games, but he came back strong in this one. And, you know, stopping 43 of 45 shots. The Florida Panthers had 18 high danger shots in this game. And, like, that is ridiculous. And to be able to withstand that pressure, especially, you know, like you said, Armando, at the beginning of the game, when the Flyers just came out completely flat and they were tired, Martin Jones kept the Flyers in this game overall. So I absolutely want to make sure he gets the proper credit he deserves on that. And you also mentioned Morgan Frost coming into this game. And I just really think, you know, this call up, we've mentioned that it was a really difficult situation for him to come into after the tough loss against Tampa Bay. And, you know, coming into a team that maybe was a little bit down, and to have to take on this responsibility of being maybe this spark. And, you know, I think he performed admirably. Like you said, Russ, I think he played real well defensively. He, you know, forechecked a little bit when he needed to. He got a little creative when he needed to. You know, he still has a little way to go, but I think this was an excellent first outing for him. And then I also do want to mention, you know, the Flyers put everything in a blender this game, all the lines and the D pairings. And I just want to, you know, bring up one that I thought really stood out, and that was with Morgan Frost, was the line with Joel Farabee, who scored the Flyers' goal, with Frost and Atkinson. I think that's a line that could stick.
Yeah, I like it. Atkinson had that great chance in overtime. I will say, as far as like Anton Lundell, that's a guy, because I I do a lot of draft work, and I called to Finland last year to interview him because during the pandemic, it was like, I don't know, I knew there was going to be another late draft. So I was like, well, I got to interview him and really see what makes him tick. And what I had taken out of it, and I give Florida credit because they kind of knew what did make him tick. And that was, he didn't score goals last year. He was looked at as just a defensive center and guy who could win faceoffs, guy who plays smart hockey. But when I spoke to him, he was like, you know, I didn't shoot enough. And, you know, my dad's a goalie and I know how to read goalies' tendencies. And so I was like, you know what? This guy is going to score goals. And he came out last year and really came this. No, last year. Yeah. Last year he came out and really started scoring in buckets. And I was like, okay. So now he's looking like a goal scorer. And now up in the NHL, boy, I got to tell you, he had a really good third period and a great overtime period. I'm not shocked that he's getting all this time on the ice. I think they're just confident in him. And like I said, I really give the Panthers credit because I think some teams passed on Lundell because they didn't think he could score.
Yeah, and last year in HIFK Helsinki, he averaged almost a point a game. He was just 1 point off from averaging a point a game. And even though he got hurt in a training camp very early in the prospect tournament, Coach Q, when he was the coach at the time, he talked about his role was always his main role was going to be mostly possibly the first forward in along with Barkov on the penalty kill. And tonight he led all forwards in ice time. He led all forwards in shorthanded time on ice too. So that's another thing for the Panthers. He leads all rookies in faceoff wins as well. And he leads all rookies in shorthanded ice on time. I mean, as far as the sexy numbers, like what Lucas Raymond is putting in Detroit right now, chances are Anton Lundell's likely not going to win the Calder this year. Chances are.
No, no.
But
I agree.
But the progress that we're seeing with Anton Lundell and him seeing some second line center minutes too, with Alexander Barkov not playing right now, it's a great opportunity for him. And when Barkov comes back and he gets shifted back down to the third line, it's going to definitely create more balance for this lineup. And Anton Lundell, the Florida Panthers are very thankful to have him. And fun fact for the Philadelphia Flyers listeners, the Panthers fans know this, but he's actually rooming with Alexander Barkov up in Boca Raton right now. So, they definitely are building that chemistry off the ice. And Barkov is being like a helping hand out there for a rookie living in the U.S. for the first time.
That makes me feel so old thinking about Barkov as the older mentor now. So were there any other standouts for you, Armando?
Ryan Lomberg. Ryan Lomberg is one who's a fourth line left winger for this team, and he continues to bring so much energy. He didn't get a point tonight, but he was on a three game point streak just a few days ago. And he definitely continues to bring that energy. He has a lot of speed. He has he had quite a few opportunities on Martin Jones, I believe. I'm looking up his he had two shots on goal, but man, the speed that he's able to use for him to race for pucks, go to the boards. Ryan Lomberg is definitely one that is starting to catch more people's eyes. And David Dwork said he has to be an everyday player for this team. Gus Forsling, his two-way game is continuing to improve. And this is a guy that the Florida Panthers picked off waivers from the Carolina Hurricanes. And he had two big stops on breakaways. He prevented a better chance from Cam Atkinson early in the game and another chance from Claude Giroux. Without Gus Forsling there, they probably would have had grade A chances on Bobrovsky. But him having a stick in there, Gus Forsling continues to be such a force and a big part of that top four for the Panthers.
Yeah, I give Brian McCabe a lot of credit. I speak to him just about every year and because I like his take on the prospects. And, you know, Forsling's interesting because I think the reason Carolina did that is because I think Brind'Amour, when he feels like someone's not playing Rob Brind'Amour hockey, they just cut him. Like, they don't even care. And they've made other mistakes that way, but they're lucky because they're deep. So that was an astute pick. The other thing is, I'm really surprised, and maybe he's going to be trade bait at this point, that Denisenko hasn't broken through. So the fact that he hasn't makes me think he's probably going to be trade bait, because I know the organization likes him. I just looked up his numbers. They're pretty good. They're not great. I don't get it, because I'm telling you, I've seen him in World Junior play. I've seen his speed. I've seen everything. It's weird, but maybe he'll take another year. I'm not sure.
For as far as the farm for the Panthers, last time I checked, Logan Hutsko is probably the biggest top performing Panther, and this is his first year in the organization.
So for me, I think the most positive thing to come out of the game for the Flyers is that, again, like after that just horrible game against Tampa, I really do think they were able to recover to some degree, and they kind of played through the exhaustion and somehow found energy and a will to at least stick with it and get some quality chances as the game went on. I mean, you know, if you look at the underlying numbers, the Flyers didn't even like crack the Corsi or like expected goals.
You figured
like,
they didn't.
The chart stayed firmly on the Florida side the entire time. But I do still think they managed to level it out a little bit. So it was a little bit more even and, you know, just show some resiliency, which I think is important at this point in the season when everybody was kind of down on them after that last game and Flyers kind of dipped from the cocky side of the scale to the distraught side of the scale that Flyers fandom does. So I appreciate that a lot, just, you know, from a mindset perspective. But Armando, what do you think like the biggest positive takeaway was for the Panthers?
The biggest positive takeaway was the fact that they had their chances. They knew they were getting great goaltending from Martin Jones, and they just refused to quit for sure. They had a few undisciplined penalties. I'm not here to argue whether it is a penalty or not, whether Ekblad was boarded earlier or not. But the fact
there were
that
a ton of missed calls in this game on both sides.
Sure.
I think you just kind of got to throw your hands up with this one.
Absolutely. But the fact that twice in that game, Ekblad retaliated, and as a referee myself, we do catch retaliations as well. More times than not. Vetrano had an unsportsmanlike as well. Thinking he was tripped, whether people agree if it's a trip or not, but, and Mackenzie Weegar, there were times that he lost his cool as well. I forget who he smashed towards the boards. There were times where the Florida Panthers had to calm themselves and be a little bit more composed in this one. And despite losing it at certain parts of this game, they're able, once the third period started, you didn't see any of that from the Florida Panthers.
I will say this, on the Flyers broadcast, and they were getting a little too cocky, before the cross-check penalty, they were like, oh, I guess the cross-checking penalties are over. And, you know, then Provorov got it. Look, he's got to be smart enough to know that you can't just fool around with your stick anymore and put it in someone's back. Mm-hmm. The minute you do that, if the other player drops because, you know, he's going down like he's a soccer player, then he's got to do that to try and get a power play. And if he puts anything into it, no matter what it is, it's getting called. Like, it just is.
And I see it from the perspective of live action versus replay.
Yes.
And in live action, it's hard to see whether a guy flops or not, or whether it's an embellishment all the time. So it's really hard to see it from that. And like I said, I bring referee tactics to the show all the time.
No, it's good. I the fact that you do referee does give you a little leg up, because a lot of times I sit next to a referee in the Flyers box and he sees things sometimes that I'm not noticing. But one thing that I don't know if we all noticed or not, I know they talked about it for a brief second. Every time players that are teammates, when a guy leaves a team, there's never 100% a guy there they love him 100%, right? There's always players that maybe didn't love that guy. And it seemed like Konechny and Gudas were on that plane where they didn't really like each other. It wasn't like a, hey, you know, nice to see you, or even, you know, trash talking just to have fun trash talking. It looked like it was getting a little serious there. And so that's something to maybe look for down the road.
Yeah, for sure. And also at the end of the first period, there was an interview with Ryan Lomberg about on a breakaway that he had with a Keith Yandle turnover. He's like, oh, I knew I could beat Yans on that one. I'm like, ooh, I might want to see a little bit of a practice tape to see if he did beat Yandle on transition once.
So just some general stuff about the Florida Panthers since we have you here. It's so great to be able to ask these questions because the last time we spoke, Joel Quenneville was still the head coach of the team. So how have the Panthers players handled the coaching change? And, you know, we alluded a little bit to a potential long-term plan, but what do you think is going to happen there?
It's simple. Wins and losses. It really comes down to that. And postseason success as well for this team as well. And the Panthers, the expectations never changed, even the moment he resigned. They knew they had the talent. They were 8-0-0 at the time of the resignation. And though the decision to have him coach the night after the whole Kyle Beach interview came out, it's not a good look. It's not. But the fact that they were, and they immediately had a back-to-back on, like, really the next day after his resignation. So that was tough for the players. They did win the first one in overtime, lost the second one in a shootout. Had a home game after. And then this team was really starting to get tested, where they had a 4-game road trip after, where they went 0-2-2 in that one. Their first sense of adversity, where they lose, their only two regulation losses this season were on a back-to-back, and Sergei Bobrovsky missed the week with an upper body injury. So Spencer Knight started both games of the back-to-back. So the young goaltender going through his lumps, and you guys know about a young goaltender going through his lumps. And
yeah, I wanted to talk about that for a sec, because when that was happening, like, look, I've watched Spencer Knight at BU. I've seen him for the NTDP. I've seen him at international play. And then we saw him last year right in the playoffs. I did think that was a little unkind to do to him, because even though he looked good last year, and I did think he had a chance to maybe be a Calder guy this year if Bob was going to falter, because we didn't know how Bob was going to play this year. Mm-hmm. That was a rough thing to do to him, because, you know, that could shake a kid's confidence. Yeah. I don't think it would with him, because I do think he's pretty mentally strong. But still, I bristled when that happened. I was like, really? They're going with him back to back? I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the second night of the back-to-back, Bobrovsky was healthy enough to be the backup when he missed a week. And I haven't checked Christopher Gibson's numbers recently, but he wasn't having a good season in AHL Charlotte when they did call him up on emergency. So the Florida Panthers wanted to do everything they could to not have Christopher Gibson start if they could have prevented.
No, I mean, I get that. But once in a while, you kind of have to do something like that, yes, even if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the fact that Spencer Knight went a whole week off without playing, especially after that 7-3 loss against the Devils, he bounced back. His very next start was against that very same New Jersey Devils team, and he had 45 saves, his career high. So
yeah,
his very last game in BC, he gave up 5 goals. And then he starts off his very first game against the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, where he only gives up 1 goal, and it's a power play goal. So as far as bouncing back, I don't have a reason to believe that whenever Spencer Knight does have a bad game that he won't bounce back. I don't have a reason to believe that he won't.
One thing that we've talked about a little bit is that Panthers' home record, and they have just extended that streak. What makes them so much better at home than on the road? Because they have faltered on the road a little bit.
So the 5 losses, all of them on the road. So they're 2-2-3 or 2-3-2 on the road right now. So it just comes down to comfort. Like I said at the top, the only game that they had where they didn't score 4 was last night against the Flyers. And the Flyers were able to cut that in half. And especially those 2 regulation losses, their only 2, like I said earlier, was that back-to-back against New York and New Jersey. What both those games had in common was that the opposition had four straight unanswered goals. The New York Rangers scored four right off the bat, and the Florida Panthers were just unable to weather storms early in that one. The second time around, the Florida Panthers were tied 3-3 at the beginning of the second period. So it was a high scoring affair early on in that game against New Jersey, 3-3 entering the second period, then four straight goals. The Florida Panthers can't weather storms in that one. And then the most frustrating one of them all in that recent trip where they went 0-2-2 was when Andrew Brunette went for the storyline instead of the proper player in the shootout against Pittsburgh, where he went with Patrick Hornquist for the shootout win instead of a better option. I would have preferred someone like Anthony Duclair. So he Hornquist. Went with that option. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he went with Patrick Hornquist.
Sometimes coaches just reward guys for having a good game, but you got to remember, if they stink in the shootout, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. That's
so funny. Yeah, that was a little bit of a gut-wrenching one where he went with that option. I was just like, oh, like I kind of get it. And then the one against Tampa, that was just a goalie show on both sides by Vasilevskiy and Bobrovsky. And there was a big chance that Aaron Ekblad had an overtime backhand against Vasilevskiy, where it's just like, you have to throw your hands up and say, what can you do? Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the NHL. And he, against any other goalie, he probably scores, and you probably have a good end to that road trip. And I was actually in person for that one in the press box up at Emily Arena, and that was hard to watch. And then Braden Point right off the bench goes all alone on Bobrovsky, and that's the second goal in months dating back to last playoffs where Braden Point has a breakaway at the other end on Bobrovsky for a game-winning goal. And even though Braden Point is out right now for the Tampa Bay Lightning, that's a player that's a big Panthers killer. But still, the fact that the Florida Panthers, the first game that they returned home after that 0-2-2 trip, fans and myself, we were reminded what this team is, of how much they feed off that home crowd, whether as much as people want to make fun of attendance and all that in Florida. They're reminded of how much they're able to score. They reminded everyone how much they're comfortable there. And also Sergei Bobrovsky. It's so great to see the bounce back of Bob after an underwhelming first two seasons for this guy. This guy is definitely in the conversation for best.
Yeah, we all killed him. I mean,
just
there was no way around it. Let me ask you about Owen Tippett, because that was a guy who – I really liked in his draft year, a great shot, had a little pushback to him. But, you know, I knew he was going to have to get a little faster and get better in his own end. And now I don't remember for this game, but I know for other games he was on the line with Huberto. There seems to be a little bit going there. That's a great landing spot for him. It seems like he's finally found his groove. What do you think?
Yeah, and it really started towards the second half of last season for Owen Tippett, where he was bumped up to that second line with Huberto and Sam Bennett. Had a beautiful goal in the playoffs against the Tampa Bay Lightning in game one. And he had another beautiful goal just the other night where Aaron Ekblad had two defenders on him. Aaron Ekblad was able to get like a drop pass to Owen Tippett, and Owen Tippett goes backhand forehand on Cam Talbot and he's been able to, one thing that Owen Tippett has is sometimes he's able to really create his own shot. And that's a beautiful thing to see. And now before Barkov got hurt, he was shifted down to the third line, paired off with Anton Lundell. And to have a player who's really great in his defensive zone and great in the faceoff circle from Lundell and a shot creator like Owen Tippett and a speedster like Frank Vetrano on that third line, I think it would have been a great opportunity for all three of them in that line. But of course, Barkov got hurt. Everybody had to be shifted up one. So now Tippett is paired with Joe Thornton. But also, who else would you want to be paired other than a legend in this game in Joe Thornton? So that's another great situation for someone like Owen Tippett. And there was this one goal, even though Tippett didn't get an assist, the one in Tampa. Tippett was going through the slot. He was checked by Victor Hedman, and even though he lost the puck, he was able to retrieve it, work it around still, And without him working that around, they don't score on a shot from Aaron Ekblad from the point and deflected in from Eetu Luostarinen. So that was a goal that I credited emotionally. I gave him an emotional assist on that one for continuing
to the old emotional assist. Interesting. Well, you know, listen, anytime you get a puck back from Victor Hedman, you got to feel good about it.
Mm-hmm, definitely, for sure. And some questions I want to ask you guys, even though Carter Hart didn't play in this one, he did play in the first matchup against the Florida Panthers. I asked a little bit of about this with Mary Clark of Crosscheck NHL, and I want to also talk about this with you guys about what's the biggest difference of Carter Hart from last year to this year?
Oh, man. His confidence is just so much higher than it was this year. And, you know, I think that he has just found his center. And I'm not like a woo-woo kind of person, but it feels like he really just is tracking the puck 1,000% better. And his side to side is a lot better. He's closing off. There was like one really bad off angle goal that kind of snuck in between him and the pipes this year, but just one. I really feel like he's learned to, you know, close off those angles a lot better than he has in the past. And he just has, like I said, this level of confidence, and he's more relaxed. Like, he just doesn't seem anxious out there at all. And he's just, you know, doing his usual rituals. And I think that, you know, both goaltenders, but Hart especially, are like carrying this team to some degree right now. And he seems to be doing fine under that sort of pressure. And he's just kind of like, yeah, you know, just doing my thing. That's fine. I'm a crazy goalie. And that's how it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can add a couple things. First one is they definitely worked with him last year and changed some things. I believe he was playing deeper in the net. And I've seen Henrik Lundqvist do that middle of his career. And it worked for him.
Yeah.
But I think it worked for Lundqvist because he wasn't necessarily susceptible to high goals. But if you're kind of susceptible to high goals and you're playing deep in your net, you really have no reaction time to stop it. And I do think too many guys were scoring that way on him last year. And then when he was losing his confidence, then he couldn't handle the puck either. And so that he would have some horrific turnovers. All that has definitely changed this year. And I do think last year there was a level of frustration too after a while. And so all that's gone. And I don't think it's going to come back. I also think it's like sophomore slump. It happens.
And when Spencer Knight went a whole week of slumping, the color analyst for the radio, Billy Lindsay, talked about comparing Spencer Knight to Carter Hart's slump last year, and definitely seeing how nothing's going to rattle him. Next question I have is, I noticed that this time around, Keith Yandel's not on power play one. He was shifted down to a power play two, and that's what Keith Yandel is known for. And great for the Florida Panthers to still honor a guy like Keith Yandel, who was with this team for 5 years before being bought out.
They said he played like, I don't know, 384 consecutive games with them. So
yeah,
something like that.
So talk about the Florida Panthers players. They still love him. He's a great leader in the locker room, but what are your impressions on who Keith Yandel is on and off the ice?
I think he's pretty much, you know, what he's been on the ice in terms of, you know, he'll make a couple mistakes like he always does, you know, a couple of turnovers. But at the same time, he is that strong veteran presence, and he's a great partner to whoever he's playing with. Like, he always knows how to compliment the other defensemen in the pairing in order to make sure that they have the best chance of trying to clear it out of the zone or, you know, making a good play in the neutral zone. I feel like his neutral zone play has been pretty positive overall. And then, you know, on the power play, the Flyers power play has been a disaster, like just complete top to bottom disaster. And so I don't really feel like Yandel is to blame for that. I think everybody is to blame for that. But when he has been at the top of his game. And at the very beginning of the season, when the power play was actually looking good, he was great out there at the point, doing what he does in terms of puck distribution, which is amazing. But off the ice, I feel like he's been such a godsend. He's hilarious. We love having him around. And just like some of the little goofball videos he makes, we appreciate the Flyers social media team on that front. And then also he's just, I think, a good support system for Kevin Hayes right now, who unfortunately hasn't played. But I think, you know, it's more important than ever that he has that support. And, you know, having a friend like Keith Yandel is great for him.
I'll tell you, like Rachel said, he was really good. And I still think he's their best option for power play one. But when he had, like, you know, one puck stick bounce over his stick, when he sort of was making, I would say, risky passes on the power play and it went the other way, then AV all of a sudden just, I think he reverted back to when Yandel was on the Rangers and he took him off power play one there too. And so he hasn't gotten a sniff on power play one since. The only thing they did that was different was they would play power play two before power play one when the Flyers power play was imploding. I still think he's their best option because he's their best passer. Provorov's not a great passer on the power play. First or second time through, first 10, 20 seconds, he's okay. But then Provorov is sort of too predictable. So at some point, maybe they'll get back to Yandel, but AV is really holding a grudge here. And I do think it's part of the reason the power play stinks. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I think it's like 3 for 41 or 2 now. It's awful. And that could really help the team. But again, coaches can be very stubborn. But he's skating well. He is, you know, he's not missing games. He never does. He's good on shifts. There are the occasional Keith Yandel hiccups. They're always going to be.
A few things this offseason that the Florida Panthers and the Philadelphia Flyers did was they were trade partners with a few similar teams this offseason. Both the Philadelphia Flyers and the Florida Panthers were trade partners with the Buffalo Sabres. Of course, the Florida Panthers trading a first-round pick for Sam Reinhart. The Philadelphia Flyers trading a first-round pick for Rasmus Ristolainen, and then trading a player to Arizona in Shane Gostisbehere, South Florida native, and then Florida traded Anton Stralman, I almost said it, Lundell, but Stralman to the Arizona Coyotes for Vladislav Kolodiachonik and a second-round pick. So kind of similar trade partners there for both these teams. But as far as the additions, a big addition in Ken Atkinson as well. As far as these newer additions to like kind of reboot this Philadelphia Flyers teams, what are you thinking of those two acquisitions specifically, or if there are any other acquisitions that you are very in favor of throughout this young season, which we're pretty much a quarter of the way through?
I know, I'll tell you, with Atkinson, they needed a goal scorer. They got a goal scorer. His speed is good. It's a different kind of speed than Jake Voracek had. Voracek had speed when he had the puck on his stick. Atkinson has speed without that, and they can get the puck passed to him and catch him in stride. I think that's a little different. I think they needed that quick flash that he can give you. So that's and he's another good locker room guy. So that was good. Ristolainen's been really good in my estimation. I think for a while he was playing a little too overly physical. Sometimes guys come to the Flyers and they feel like they have to, you know, harken back to the old days and push everybody through the boards. He kind of stopped doing that, and now he is starting to get some shots on net. He has a great shot, but, you know, it takes a little too long. The trigger's kind of long on that. But he is doing that. He's skating well. Honestly, I think now that you've got this many games in, 18, 19 games in, I think the Flyers need to be talking contract with him. If they're not, my feeling is if he's not signed by like February or something like that, he may, you know, tell his agent, hey, listen, we're not going to negotiate anymore during the season. And then I think he'll look UFA because he's having a really good year. So if the Flyers are smart, I think they would jump on this. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there on the contract. I think that he's done enough to at least start those conversations. And, yep, you know, maybe you see how the next 5 to 10 games go And then if things are progressing in the same way, you lock that in.
Yeah, as far as return, I thought that the Sabres got a great return for Rasmus Ristolainen, a better one that they did for Sam Reinhart. And I was like, whoa. And this was a guy that was very underwhelming in his time in Buffalo. And I hear, of course, with Locked On NHL, we hear more Sabres talk with Joe DiBiase being there on Tuesdays and Fridays. So we heard a lot about Rasmus Ristolainen, about how Sabre fans weren't like the biggest fans of Rasmus, but it looks like that he's now in a better situation, a better system that fits better for him.
They did give up too much, the Flyers, but they didn't give up too much if they get Ristolainen and get him extended. If they don't get him extended, it will be a disaster of a trade because they did give him a lot. If they get him extended, I could live with it, but it still was a lot.
All right, so let's wrap things up with some rapid fire Thanksgiving fun questions. So first off, Armando, what are you thankful for this year in the world of hockey?
I'm thankful that I get to go to more games in person, for sure. That's for sure. I've already gone to two in person. I went to a total of two last year. And I feel a lot safer doing so with myself being vaccinated as well. So definitely feel safer going there. And fun fact for my Locked On Panthers listeners, I will be in the building for Saturday's game against the Seattle Kraken, where the Florida Panthers could possibly break the record for most home wins without a loss, possibly breaking the Blackhawks' record from 63-64. So that's what I'm very thankful for. What about you guys?
Well, I'm thankful for the 82 game schedule. Like, I was getting games last year and was very happy about that, but I didn't love a shortened season. I like the 82 game season because it is more of a proving ground. I felt last year was still a little flukish, but it was still an NHL season. I was okay with it. So I'm just thankful for that.
And I'm thankful that we get to see more teams like the Florida Panthers that we did not see last year. I'm appreciating getting to see all of the talent that's around the NHL and not just the same seven teams. So that's a good thing this year. All right. What is your favorite Thanksgiving side dish and dessert, Armando?
Side dish? I'd have to go with mac and cheese as the side dish. People can debate whether it's a regular meal or a side dish. I see it as a side. And as far as dessert, I'm a sucker for cheesecake. I am a big sucker for it. And just even going to the movies, like a Regal, like right next to, like in like the Winter Park area of Orlando, it was like 11 p.m. I was walking towards my car, and my girlfriend and I, we see a Cheesecake Factory, and I said, "Do you just want to get a cheesecake to go?" And boom, I'm a big sucker for cheesecake. So that is my favorite dessert for that.
Nice.
I'll vary this, but I do love cheesecake too. I'll go with mashed potatoes and gravy. I like it. I don't care if anything else touches it. It's all good. I know some people don't like things mixing with it. I'm okay with it. And then I'll also go with cherry pie. I'm a apple pie you can get all the time. I just feel like cherry pie is good for a change up. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a horrible food take person, and I'm going to say I love the sweet potatoes with the marshmallows on top, and I will have that. I know.
I like it.
I love it, and I will continue to eat that. And I will say I will have an apple pie, but it's going to be like slightly fancier. Like, it'll be like an apple crumb pie.
Oh, I like the apple crumb. That's good.
You know, and switch it up that way, but you just can't go wrong with that.
For sure.
All right, Armando, who on your team would be the best Thanksgiving host?
I think the best one would probably be, I feel like the best one would probably be Aaron Ekblad. I feel like he'd be very hospitable. And I feel the DJ for the party would be Frank Vergano, because he does control the music in the locker room. So Aaron Ekblad would be the host. and Vetrano would be the DJ there. And the one who'd probably get probably the craziest at the party would probably be someone like Ryan Lomberg.
Nice.
I could see that. I'm going to go with Nate Thompson because, you know, he wants everybody to look good and drip. And I think he would set the fashion bar high at the Thanksgiving table instead of guys just coming in sweaters like Claude Giroux. So I think that would be a good look for Thanksgiving. And I don't even think about who would be the DJ on the Flyers. I have no clue.
Maybe Claude Giroux.
Maybe.
Or Travis Konecny. I think those two would be good on the DJ front. But I think also another good host might be Cam Atkinson. He's like a super family guy. And so I feel like he just put out a really great spread and just really try and make people feel welcome out there. And of course, like, if he's the host, I think Gritty shows up automatically. And that's a party, right? All right. Then on the other side of things, who do you abandon and make do the dishes at the end of the night?
I think just because he's a quiet guy and he's a rookie, I think that the Panthers would say, hey, we got to make the rook do it. I think they would make Anton Lundell do it. And the guy who probably wouldn't say much. But there's two rookies on the team with him and Spencer Knight, but Spencer Knight is more talkative. So he probably say, hey, don't make me do it. And then Anton Lundell would just sit here, like put his hands up. It's like, ah, damn it. Okay. And so, yeah, probably for like rookie reasons, I would say Anton Lundell.
You know, I'm going to go with Ristolainen because I just feel like it'd be funny to see a guy that big, like trying to do the dishes. He's probably going to be all hunched over. And I think they'd make fun of him.
I love that. I feel like I would want to assign Joel Farabee to it, but he would do such a terrible job. Like, and there would be soap and like puddles of water everywhere when he was done. So then maybe you would have to bring in Sean Couturier for cleanup. Like, I feel like he's just that responsible guy that's going to make sure everything is done right.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving, everyone out there on Locked On Flyers land and Locked On Florida Panthers land. This has been a really fun conversation, a little longer than our normal shows, but totally worth it. Well, that'll do it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening today and every day. We will be back again on Monday. Like I said, we will recap the weekend games against the Carolina Hurricanes and New Jersey Devils. Plus, we will have our nemesis of the week. As a reminder, we always want to hear from you. Send us in your mailbag questions via Twitter at Locked On Flyers, or you can email the show at lockedonflyers@gmail.com. I'm Rachel. I'm on Twitter at rmiriam. That's R-M-I-R-I-A-M. Russ is on Twitter at Sportsology. Thanks again for listening and have a great day. You made us your first listen. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling.